back. I'm Chris Cuomo. Welcome back to News Nation's Town Hall. President Trump is 100 days plus into his second administration. We're taking a look at what's working, what needs to be done better, and why. Great guests tonight, perspective across the spectrum. Bill O'Reilly, Stephen A. Smith, Ronna McDaniel, Chris Sununu have been here. We had Steve Bannon. We had James Carville. O'Reilly, you know, kind of got out of line with Carville a little bit.
He deserved it.
And once it sunk in, he left. And we had Patrick Bet-David. And now we're doing something for you, if you just switched over from wherever else you were watching us or listening to us, that only happens on News Nation. And I only say that because it's not easy, okay? There's one guarantee in political coverage right now. Members of the two parties do not want to be on at the same time, okay? Now, my show at News Nation has made this a priority because I know you need to see it, okay? You need to see that Republicans and Democrats can talk. They may not agree, but they can be on the screen at the same time. Pretty low bar, but if you think about it, there's no other show where you're going to see it. We do it here, and I'm very grateful for it, all right? Joining me now are two friends of this show. I respect them both, okay? Massachusetts Democrat Member of Congress Jake Auchincloss and Georgia Republican Member of Congress Dr. Rich McCormick. To those who are watching for the first time, I want to say to you guys, you've done this consistently, and you do it well, and I thank you for it. You are showing people that you can disagree without being disagreeable. So thank you both. So I'll start with you, Jake. What we've been talking about, I don't know if you heard the president's interview, but he was basically saying, look, somebody's got to save the country from these trade imbalances and America getting taken advantage of. It's not going to be easy. It may not be quick. There may be some pain, but it had to be done. Your response.
Chris, thanks for having me on. Rick, it's nice to be with you again. Chris, I have a trade imbalance with my grocery store. It doesn't mean my grocery store is taking advantage of me. The president is using talking points to obscure the fact that he has broken his core campaign promise. His core campaign promise was, I'm going to be good on the economy. He's been bad on the economy. The economy contracted this last quarter. If it does that again next quarter, it'll be a recession, the first man-made recession in American history. And there's every indication that it will. Price expectations are surging. Private sector employment is contracting. And we've got Walmart and Dollar General CEOs saying that their customers don't have enough money to last until the end of the month. The president has failing on the economy right now.
How do you see it, Doc?
I disagree. First of all, I just came from a lectureship at the Library of Congress. They were talking about Reagan. They were talking about what a great president, what he did for America. One of the greatest things that Reagan did when he came in after the end of the Carter administration is give back America its mojo. Make you proud to be an American. Stand up to the bad guys. Talk about responsible government. Talk about common sense government, where you don't have 10 million people coming across the southern border, where you're not ashamed to make money, where you're not relying on class warfare and racial baiting to make your point, to pay off people to vote for you. Those days are over. Those days of hiring people for millions and billions of dollars to do the wrong thing here in America and overseas are over. We're going back to accountability. I think that's something America wanted. That's what they voted for. That's what they're going to get. Whether the economy falters or not in the short term, look at us in about a year. That's when we're going to be able to tell. That's when the midterms are going to reflect on everything that happens. Because when you have 70 countries come to the table and say, let's have zero tariffs, that is a huge win for America.
Jake?
Chris, my friend from Georgia just set the world indoor record for MAGA talking points. I'm glad that he thinks people shouldn't be ashamed to make money. I agree with capitalism. The good news is no one's going to be ashamed because no one's making any money. $4.6 trillion have been wiped off the value of the stock market under President Trump's tenure. Okay, that's people's retirement accounts. That's how they save for their kids' college educations. That's how they ensure that they have financial freedom as they enter their golden years. And it's gone because him and Howard Lutnick put together a PowerPoint slide calculated with first grade math. Nobody in this world is taking us seriously right now. Russia is laughing at us across the negotiating table. China can't even figure out what the tariffs mean. And Japan and Australia and our allies in Europe are wringing their hands wondering what happened to the country they used to be able to rely upon. Meanwhile, the cost of a vehicle in this country is going to go up by $7,500 with nothing to show for it.
All right. You got a lot of people rubbing their hands on their pants.
Okay,
right,
look. Believe me.
Especially him.
With all due respect, Congressman.
Let's talk about the biggest robbery to anybody's savings account is inflation.
Hold on. Party politics bores me to death. Okay? You guys are champions on it. It's not a MAGA thing. It's a party. You can't possibly think that within 100 days, Donald Trump has wrecked the entire U.S. economy. That's absurd. Nobody would make that statement other than a partisan player. You've got to give. Now, Trump may fail, and he knows if he does, his legacy is blown up, and he doesn't have a long time, as one of our audience members made the point. There's some urgency. But to just say, oh, $1 trillion is gone, when the stock market could go up 5,000 points in 2 weeks if the trade deals that Trump is saying are going to happen do happen. So let's stay in the real world and let's try to put the party nonsense aside, okay?
And no, I would add, party nonsense.
It is nonsense, Congressman, and you know it. You're reading off a script. You're bringing in a script that you've said 50 times in the last 3 days. It's nonsense.
Bill, don't talk to me about nonsense. When I'm out in my district talking to small business owners who are laying off their workers,
okay.
I am talking to social service providers.
What's the unemployment rate in the country, Congressman? What's the unemployment rate in the country?
This is the economy that Donald Trump
What is the unemployment rate in the country?
And at the same time,
you don't know.
At the same time as he is adding $7 trillion,
you don't know what the unemployment rate in the country is.
It's 2.4%. Let's remember back. You know, the congressman brings up a good point about Reagan. 81 and 82, the economy was in tough shape. Right? He had to make tough decisions. He said, be patient. And in 84, not only was it a huge electoral win, but the country's economy was absolutely booming. So these things absolutely do take time. And to Bill's point, there's only two issues. The tariffs, the jury's out on the tariffs. We'll see where it lands. But politically, there's only two metrics that Americans will vote on. Do I have a job? Is the cost of living too much? So it's unemployment and inflation, unemployment and inflation. And depending on where those two things are, come November of 26, we'll determine whether people are voting in or out for the Republican Party.
Governor, one more point. The Republicans do this, too. I know I was hard on the congressman from the Democratic side. But the Republicans say, if you listen to talk radio, oh, this is going to be magic. Yeah. The carpet is going to take everybody into prosperity. They don't know that.
They don't know.
That's right.
They're just reading off the damn script. Right. And I'm tired of the damn script.
Well, I'm tired of the damn script, too.
Good.
But I also understand why they're doing it. And they're doing it because...
So empathetic.
Listen, because the objective is to get reelected. The objective is to remain in
power. Not here.
The objective is not here, but the point is, you invited them here, so you got to know what
you... I didn't invite them.
You got to know what you get. You got to know what you get.
I would have had a whole different...
That's what I'm trying to say. No, I wouldn't. I like the guys.
The only guy I invited was Trump.
I'm just...
He invited all the others.
Actually, you invited me, too, but that's beside the point. The point that I'm trying to make...
You blew it. Now your reputation is shot.
There we go. You're trying. Listen, the Democrats' only shot. They got to win the midterms. They're going to do whatever they must to win the midterms.
It is
up to us. It is up to us to deduce what they're saying, what is valid and what is invalid, to decide what direction we're going to go in.
Look,
it's not their job to do the homework for us.
I'm with you. There's nothing that's been neglected more than what it really means to be a citizen. Okay, I blame the parties all the time. I like Jake and I like Doc McCoy.
So do I.
I think that they're fair brokers and they're definitely members of parties. And that's not a problem because you can't exist in the system without it. And people use talking points. The president was using talking points. It's not an unusual
thing. They all do it.
I would argue that there's a matter of degree, and I think the president has set a new standard.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, the real problem that we have with Congress, and the reason I invite you guys on, and I appreciate you so much doing it, you know, no matter what Bill says, is that without Congress, none of the things that Trump wants to do are going to get done the way they need to. And I am so shocked that he did this tariff deal before he came to you guys to do immigration reform. Because you got to change the asylum rules. And you have to change the standards of how things get done on the border. And you have to really deeply consider how we deal with people who are in this country right now. The president doesn't have the power to do it alone, and he's going to try. Doc, this question's to you first, and then I want Jake to weigh in on it. He's doing it because he doesn't think you will get it done. He doesn't think you'll get him a bill. So he's doing it himself, and we both know he's going to get jammed up. Is there responsibility within your party to make some legislation to motivate this agenda?
Yeah, we're going to have to codify a lot of things he's doing. But as Stephen A. Smith referred to, what's interesting is Obama and Clinton and Biden had the same laws we had before when we had immigration, when Obama was the chief deporter. These laws didn't change when Biden came in and suddenly all of a sudden we had to open the border. That was an executive order. That was him saying, we're going to open up. We're going to accept tens of millions of people in America on your American dime. The question is, do the American people, this is a common sense question. This is not politics. This is what lost the election for the Democrats, in my opinion, is they said, it doesn't make sense. I'm not going to pull money out of my pocket to have somebody come from nations and nations away, going through Mexico because they're unsafe in Mexico somehow, and come to America and stay in a 4-star hotel, get a free cell phone, get 3 squares on my dime when I don't even have enough money for my family and the economy can handle, because in the future we're going to have so much debt, America cannot sustain it and will not be the world economic power, the industry standard of currency in the future if we don't get more responsible. That's why they lost.
Jake, what's your take on this?
Chris, my take is that other than Governor Sununu on that stage, nobody who is on that stage right now has talked to an actual constituent in years. I have done 16 town halls in the last 3 months. I'm talking to my constituents. What I'm hearing repeatedly is people are afraid. People are afraid at how badly managed this economy is being. They are afraid at how weak this president is on the global stage.
Sir?
And I would ask my question to my friend from Georgia here. You talk about the national debt. I agree with you. The last president to balance the budget, by the way, was a Democrat. The next president to balance the budget should be a Democrat, too. And my question for you is, if you worry about the national debt, why did you just vote to add $7 trillion to the national debt 2 weeks ago?
Actually, I didn't. If you look at my voting record, I voted against the CR in December. One of 34 people that voted against the CR in December, because 100% of the Democrats voted for it. I knew it was a bad bill. If you look at the history of what I proposed, what I've
done,
everything. I let you speak. We're not going to do that. You're going to let me speak now. So if you're going to talk about the debt, tell me one thing that the Democrats have seriously considered that would reduce debt in America. I'm one of the 34. I'm one of the holdouts. I'm the only guy. I will go to war with anybody over this debt crisis because I think it is the future of American state. It's not a partisan issue. I think we're going to have to deal with Social Security. Well, that's a bipartisan issue. But I'm not going to play games on that.
I'm gonna come up with
one thing the Democrats have done to reduce.
I'm going to interject to say this to the representative. That kind of attitude where you just said only one person on this stage has talked to constituencies other than you. That's why y'all lost. Because let me tell you something. Let me tell you something right now. I can go to an arena with 20,000 people or a stadium with 80,000 people, and I can run across tens, if not hundreds of people that speak on these issues. Just because you're not speaking directly to a politician doesn't mean you're not speaking directly to the issues that affect the American public. You can't say something like that, sir, respectfully.
And he's going to be president.
I totally agree.
I know. You saw how it went. Jake, you can't see Stephen A., but when he was saying that, he had the thumb and the fist.
Yeah.
Looks like a politician. I'm telling you that right now. Jake, I got to jump. I'm out of time, but we're going to continue this conversation. Jake Auchincloss, you're always welcome to make the arguments here, and they're often very cogent. Dr. McCormick, same. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for letting the new audience that's watching us tonight see what we're about. Thank you for being part of it. Now, Chris, thank you. Rana, thank you. Stephen A., thank you. Big Bill, thank you. I'm blessed with great friends who come to help me out and do the job for the people at News Nation. Thank you for being part of that. Most of all, thanks to each and all of you. I appreciate your patience. I appreciate your indulgence in being part of this. And to all of you, this is what News Nation's about. This is what we do on a nightly basis. I don't always have these big shots, but we do the best we can, and we do it for you. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank the team. And most of all, I want to thank our sponsor. You don't usually hear that from a journalist, but I'm telling you, I can't have these kinds of conversations without that kind of corporate partnership.
And Cuomo did a pretty good job tonight, right?
Yeah.
He's going to pick up our coverage right after the break. Thank you for being with News Nation. We'll do it again.
Super Bowl of town halls with President Donald Trump speaking about his first 100 days is now finished. And this is the post-game show of the Super Bowl of all town halls as we look to the president's next 100 days in office. News Nation Chief Washington Anchor Leland Vitter with you. News Nation contributor Chris Saliza. Chris Steirewalt, News Nation political editor, host of The Hill Sunday. Mark Short, White House Legislative Affairs Director. That's not him. He's over there. This is Rena Shaw, CEO of Rylex Strategies, former senior staffer to two Republican members of Congress, and Mark Short. At the end, Sir Steirewalt, a first 100 days that started about the border and DOGE and DEI ends the economy. Is that good or bad for Donald Trump?
Well, it's bad if it keeps going this way. Look, 100 days is not a very long time. Franklin Roosevelt instituted the idea of give me 100 days and we're going to change the world. And every president since then has either been blessed or damned by that standard. The Trump White House did an extraordinary amount of PR and spin and pushing forward into this. And this was sort of the capstone to it, his participation in this town hall. But, you know, look, if you had to give him a grade now, he'd be flunking because, and I think it basically comes down to this. He came in with low expectations 8 years ago. People thought he would be bad, and he beat those expectations. He came in with high expectations this time because nostalgia for his administration before COVID. He is coming up short of those expectations, and they're punishing him for it.
Mark, in terms of what he has done, and poll numbers show this, most consequential, most effective starts in the first 100 days, Trump's second term wins out in the News Nation poll. You think about what he has done on the border and what he has done, and I'll put it in big terms, DEI. He doesn't seem to be getting credit either for the speed or the effectiveness, like it or not, of what he did. Why is that?
Because of the economy. I mean, I think the reality is you're right. He's had a very impactful first 100 days. It's a dramatic contrast to President Biden. He's done a great job on the border. I think that people support what he's done in DEI. Unfortunately, he's adopted traditional labor union Democrat trade policy. And I think that that's really hurting the economy. And I think that the Americans elected him to secure the border and the economy. And so I think that that's what's holding him back right now.
Rena, the flood the zone strategy of Trump 1.0 is on steroids, as are most things. Trump 2.0. He did a rally yesterday, ABC News interview, and then the two-hour cabinet meeting today, plus our town hall. Is there any oxygen right now for Democrats?
Absolutely not, because it's action, action, action from Pennsylvania Avenue. And that's what I think the American people voted for. Even the people who were not still willing to admit they voted for Trump, they wanted this action. In a nutshell, this 100 days has been a sprint to reshape America's playbook. And in my view, that is the best thing that this country could be experiencing right now. Because the period of inactivity that Biden fooled us with was so detrimental to how America is seen on the world stage that you needed a bombastic ball breaker like this guy. And he's doing it. And he's doing it well. Look at this Ukraine deal. I mean, it's a geopolitical chess move to secure resources. Who doesn't want that if the end game really is to push Russia away and stop this invasion into Ukraine? It's all good stuff.
Where is the lane, and we saw sort of some semblance right now, Saliza, for Democrats when you have Trump who is willing to flood the zone and engage on all of the things that typically a president who's having a hard time doesn't?
Yep. Can't swing at every pitch. I mean, it's as simple as that. And I think they get sucked into these fights. You and I have talked about this on air and off air. Harvard, people don't know that Harvard got billions of dollars in federal funding. So whether you agree with him or disagree with him about that, that's a fight he'll win. Kilmar Abrego-Garcia, there's a reason that Hakeem Jeffries has told his caucus that he doesn't want any more trips to El Salvador, because that is a winner for Donald Trump. Even DOGE, Musk colors this a little, but even DOGE, like most people go out on the street and say, is the federal government too big? People will say, yes. This is to Chris's point, the only one of the big four is the economy. And if he had just started on taxes and then done tariffs, we'd be having a different conversation. If the first 100 days was, can Donald Trump get his one big, beautiful bill through Congress?
And if you know, that's the question,
and you subtract
right
the
now.
Tariff part out of it, and that comes later in the year. I don't think he's at 80% approval. I don't think that's possible. But, he could be in the high 40s, low 50s. But that's,
he's in the 40s.
6'10", I could dunk. I mean, you know, it's like that's not the reality of the world.
You know what I didn't anticipate here, though, is the Democrats having nobody to counter all this action.
Hold on. Kamala Harris spoke today.
I didn't know.
It is amazing how little attention that did get. I mean, I think it's worth...
Take us behind the scenes of the strategy for Donald Trump right now to continue to double down on tariffs. Here he is talking about creating jobs during the town hall.
It actually creates jobs for the middle income. It's going to be better for the middle income. It's going to save our country because we're going to become rich again. Stephen, we lose so much money on trade. It's unbelievable.
O'Reilly really pressed him on a timeline for some of these deals. He said, I believe I have more time than O'Reilly thought he had. What are you hearing from Republicans on the Hill?
I think he probably does have more time because I think he has such a solid grasp of the Republican Party right now. I think he's bleeding independents, but I think his control of Republicans does give him more time. But I also think the policy is greatly flawed, so I'm not sure time is going to help them in the long run. I mean, again, this trade policy is what labor union Democrats advanced for decades. And Donald Trump has been very effective at winning over blue-collar voters into the Republican Party. But this trade agenda is one that I think is causing tremendous damage to the economy. I think the numbers out today were really bad. Consumer confidence down for 5 months in a row. GDP negative in the first quarter. I think that there's actually probably reporting that you see ships that are actually not coming to Los Angeles ports anymore, staying in Asia, diverting elsewhere. I think that it's not going to be good heading down the road.
Starwell, does Donald Trump not benefit immensely from the fact that we are experiencing a realignment of the political parties in America, and he is now at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to pick and choose what issues he wants to fight on? I thought O'Reilly made that point as well.
So Mark raises a good point about this, which is the first Trump administration, Trump benefited enormously from resistance within his own party, right? The effective resistance within his own cabinet and within the Congress from why did he get a tax plan? Other than the fact Mark Short worked for him.
But we have the answer sitting here.
But that he had Paul Ryan, and there was back and forth. There was tension. There was pushback from Congress. Why did he get all those judges and Supreme Court justices? Mitch McConnell did a really good job up there. You talk to these people in Congress now. What do they say? Well, we got to see whatever the president wants to do. And you go around the cabinet meeting and everybody says whatever the president wants to do. Trump is a better disruptor if he is facing resistance from competent people who will tell him no and push back on him. He doesn't have those people now.
I think that's exactly right. I think one of the best ways to understand him, everybody thinks like, oh, he's a puncher. He punched everyone in the face. He's actually kind of a counter puncher, I think, broadly speaking.
He'll tell you that, by the way.
He's good at Joe Biden said blah, blah, blah. Boom. He's good at coming back at it. He's better as a foil in some, I know this is weird because he's such an oxygen eater, but he's better as a foil in some ways than as a lead actor. Like, I think he does want you to kind of punch and then see where your imbalance is.
This is how he...
And it is hard when look, I know Democrats get up in arms about this, but the truth is, to Chris's point, the Republican Party up there, I saw Marco Rubio say the other day, like, well, I mean, you know, we'll just see about Russia. I don't, you know, like Marco Rubio is like a Russia hawk.
There's nothing that symbolizes this better than today's cabinet meeting. We were waiting for a moment to play this soundbite.
Oh, gosh.
I
think this could be the greatest administration since the founding of the country.
What we have seen since your election and the inauguration has been nothing short of a recruiting renaissance.
Your first 100 days has far exceeded that of any other presidency in this country.
It's been a momentous 100 days with you at the helm.
I want to thank you for your vision, for your leadership.
He's actually doing the things that he promised that he would do.
Sort of the Aaron Sorkin writing aside, there is no question that every president wishes they had that kind of control over their party at any one time. Okay, I'm getting fair from everybody. If this town hall showed anything, and I think Cuomo, Bill O'Reilly, Stephen A. Smith did a great job representing this. I'll leave you with the last word. That Americans sort of really want this president to succeed. There was no one who was happy post Joe Biden. There is a real desire to see him succeed.
In general, yeah, because when the president succeeds, the country succeeds. I mean, it's simple logic here. But the one thing I took away from that town hall sort of ties into what you gentlemen had to say, which I sort of disagree with. You know, look, this administration doesn't care about allied unity. They care about domestic optics. And here we are saying, wow, this cabinet just reveres him and loves him. Well, didn't Joe Biden's cabinet do the same thing? Every president's cabinet loves them. But he's facing opposition, Trump, from global leaders this time. And that's what he's having to punch back with. So when I hear Carville say, I don't want to be in a country that makes T-shirts or something to that effect.
No, he said exactly that.
Yeah, okay. So I'm getting that right. I rolled my eyes because I think this country is good when it makes T-shirts and fighter jets. So I don't know where the debate is here about where we're going, but all I'm saying is that we need a little bit of short-term pain for that long-term gain. And I was never a fan of Trump, but I kind of am getting on board right now because I think there's a long-term.
There's not a big list of people who are converting the way you are right now.
I'm just, no, don't
if you look at the poll numbers, but you brought up short-term pain versus long-term
yeah.
pain. 42%, I'm willing to accept short-term economic pain, such as higher prices or slower growth, if it leads to a stronger economy or greater independence from countries like China. 58%, the government should prioritize addressing immediate issues such as inflation and job security. We cannot afford policies that harm people now, even if they may benefit in the long run. Lots of words in the screen. 58% of Americans say, I don't like short-term pain, even if I get long-term gain. Only 42% are signing up to storm the beaches at Normandy.
That looks like a drug disclosure. Yeah. I can't.
We need a narrator to talk super fast over it.
I try.
I'm not convinced that's what it says. You're specifically saying China. And I think the president's message on his trade agenda has been confusing from the start. Sometimes it's because of fentanyl. Sometimes it's because we have a trade deficit. Sometimes it's because we're trying to lower trade barriers. If he'd been organized and said we're going to have a trade war to fight China, more people would be supportive. But he launched a trade war against the entire globe.
And I hate to break everything down to messaging, because sometimes the policy is just a policy, but I do think to Mark's
point, messaging is changing.
You would be better served if he had sold it a little bit on the front end and explained it even a little bit. The short-term pain thing started to come in once it was clear
there was going to be short-term pain.
Yeah.
I think you got,
but
you know, it's like you go to the doctor, they're like, this is going to pinch for a minute and then it'll be okay. I'm like, okay, it's going to pinch for a minute, it'll be okay. I'd rather that than it pinches and I'm like, when is this going to end?
Oh, so Sarah, I'll give you the last word here. And I thought it was interesting that O'Reilly kept pushing Trump on this because I think O'Reilly really believes that the American people are scared and they have a limited amount of patience. The point, though, was Trump started to pivot and started talking about China, talking about how China's hurting more than we are. Can you re-message?
Well, what's the shelf life for a Donald Trump utterance? 90 seconds until the next interview, until the next conversation. And this is the problem whenever people talk about messaging, whenever people talk about what should this White House say, and Donald Trump will say, yeah, that sounds pretty good, and then he'll say it. And then 30 seconds later, he will say the opposite. If Howard Lutnick was the last person he talked to, comes out, we're all going to make iPhones here, we're going to have a trade war forever, and we're going to be a T-shirt making just full of looms, just full of looms in this country. And then if he talks to Scott Bessent after that, he comes out and he says, we're doing this to get a deal and we're going to live in a libertarian utopia of frictionless trade around the globe. It's whoever he talked to last is the message that comes out next.
All right, panel, thank you very much. Great having you both. Gentlemen, Rena, thank you very much. All right. This Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern, spend the hour with Bill O'Reilly. We're going to flip the script on this. 100 days of Trump. Are you better off? The vice president and the cabinet went after the media today, calling out its criticism of Trump, is going after the refs, going to win this time around. Hall here on News Nation to mark his first 100 days in office. Came here tonight to discuss one question from the audience. well, got some applause and some chuckles. It was a question about whether or not President Trump had made any mistakes in his first 100 days. Take a listen.
I don't really believe I've made
you mistakes. You made any mistakes.
We're in a transition period. We're in a transition period.
I think Lee is reassured.
I think you're going to see tremendous economic victories over the next period of a year, like far greater than ever imagined.
With us now, Senator James Lankford of the great state of Oklahoma, member of the Finance Committee. Welcome, sir.
Thank you
for staying up late with us. We appreciate it. You agree with the president, no mistakes, tremendous economic growth.
I don't think anyone was surprised when he answered. I can't think of a mistake. I think zero Americans were surprised by that answer on that. He is one that has high risk, high reward focus. He's taken a lot of risks in his business career, been very, very successful. I think he's very focused on that now to say, hey, if it's not working exactly right, we're going to keep working until it does work.
Look. Most Americans, especially working class Americans who elected him, will tell you the economy is not working for them, right? We can get agreement on that. President Trump was pushed by Bill O'Reilly, and I think rightfully so, on a timeline. Trump thinks he has more time than O'Reilly does. The question is, how long does President Trump on tariffs have from the Senate and from the House to continue his unilateral actions?
So I think as long as he's making progress, I think that's the big issue.
So what do you guys need to see?
Well, I would tell you just my own conversations with some of the administration officials. It's let's get the first two fish in the boat. So what there's 17, 18, 19, 20.
We've been promised that, though, for a couple weeks now.
I get
now.
It, but this only started about 3 weeks ago is when it started. We lose track of the fact that it was the first week of April is when the president announced we're going to
Liberation
do tariffs
Day, right.
And started the process of Liberation Day to be able to take off starting April the 2nd, and it just took off to be able to go from there. So there's a lot that's happened just over the last 3.5 weeks in this, and I think there's still a willingness, and I would tell you, farmers and ranchers in Oklahoma that I talk to, that everybody comes to me and says, okay, they're going to be panicked on it. No, they're not. They're not panicked because they want to see new markets. They understand their beef is not allowed to go into Australia, for instance. That makes absolutely no sense. We buy Australian beef. Australians are like, no, thank you. We're not going to buy American beef. So there's lots of markets that we think those should be open. Vietnam should be open. Korea should be open. Japan should be open. These are trading partners and allies, but they blocked us out for a long time. And I think a lot of people are like, okay, let's go settle it. But they're also saying, settle the first one. Settle the second one. Get it going.
In other words, I think you and I could both agree president needs wins.
Yeah, but I think he's going to get wins. Benjamin Netanyahu showed up within the week, and what Israel used to have a 17% tariff on the United States. He showed up and said, how about zero? There, we're going to drop that. Immediately, Vietnam showed up within 48 hours for their trade delegation.
And said, but they haven't made a deal yet. There's no deal yet.
Yeah, but trade deals are not like just signing up for a car and doing a contract on there. There's a lot of complications. There's a lot of issues
Fair
that
enough.
Go into it. Many of these deals take years on it. They're trying to do multiples in months.
Okay. That is the tariff side of the economy. The one place that there was an enormous amount of agreement in this town hall, and it was amazing, James Carville, the raging Cajun, it's the economy, Cajun, stupid, yeah. For Bill Clinton, and Steve Bannon of MAGA World, Cuomo calls him the MAGA spirit animal, had agreement. Take a listen.
So Steve says that he's going to raise taxes on the rich to help pay for the tax cuts for the middle class this time.
I hope that Steve is right. I don't think he is.
Why?
Because I think they're going to cut tax. I think they're going to keep the tax cuts for the billionaires. If he's right, if they raise taxes on rich people and help middle class people, and they keep expanding health care for middle class people and subsidies to help so people can buy insurance, if they keep doing that and they tax billionaires, you know what? I'm going to come on your show, Chris, and say, you know, I got it wrong.
Carville going to have to apologize to Cuomo?
I would say there's this big focus about how much can you go raise taxes on people. That's not the desire to be able to do this. We want to be able to have a growing economy. Right now the fight is we want to keep the tax rates the way they are. If you listen to James Carville close, he was like, they're not going to go raise taxes on these folks because he knows that the focus right now is just to not have the tax rates change at all, just to be able to lock it in where they were. Corporate rates, small businesses, individuals, lock those rates in where they are right now. That's created one of the greatest economic booms that we have had in a generation. If you look at 2017 in the tax bill and you look at the revenue increase that's happened since then, it's dramatic. It all expires December the 31st of this year. If our most basic principle is just extend what we have right now, keep that going.
Okay. I'm just going to push you on this a little bit.
All right.
Because there is this desire in the populist wing of the Republican Party to get no taxes on tips, no taxes in overtime, in exchange for a increase on taxes in millionaires and billionaires, as they would call it.
Right.
Non-starter.
Yeah, I don't see it as a non-starter. There's not
you
an
see
aggressive,
it as a non-starter?
I do. I see it as a non-starter because okay. There's not an aggressive push to be able to say, let's go find some people we can go raise taxes on. The reason we have taxes at all is because we have expenses as a government. Let's have the fairest, most level playing field that we can for every single tax bracket on it, and to be able to have an equal way that we actually do taxes on it, and then to be able to bring in what we need to be able to cover what's actually happening and all the expenses on this.
The point has been made over and over that President Trump's poll numbers are down. That does not necessarily mean his political power is down.
And he argued it's because bad polling. I did hear that very clearly from the town hall meeting.
He does.
Yeah.
Although that kind of sounds like the Joe Biden argument, doesn't it, from
sure.
a couple of years ago?
Sure. I get it.
But his poll numbers are down. I think you may agree with me also, though, that his political power is not down. You think about the border.
Right.
You think about what he's done with DEI. Enormous speed and success that I think everybody was surprised by in Washington. Is he not a little bit more powerful 100 days in than people thought he would be?
No, I think he's been very active. He's been very aggressive. I think it's 4 years of pent-up energy. I would tell you the week after the election happened in November, I sat down with my staff here in Washington, D.C., and I said, okay, for those of you that were here during the first Trump administration, you know we're walking into. For those of you that were just hired during the Biden administration, buckle up. Because things are going to move much faster than what they have been under the Biden administration. Boy, have they. They've moved at exceptional speed. But they've also had 4 years of thinking about this. And so for executive orders and actions and what they were going to actually implement in policy, they were able to move on that very rapidly. Like the border closing literally within a week and a half, we went from thousands a day coming to 200 people trying to, and even those folks are arrested and turned around.
Senator? Really appreciate it.
You bet. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, sir, as well. You're welcome back anytime. Thank you. All right. For all of the president's problems with the polls, Democrats are doing even worse. CNN shows us that they're sitting at a favorability rating of 29%. In other words, below freezing. This is a record low in CNN's polling since 1992 and a 20-point drop since January of 2021. Comes as 55% of voters approve of Trump's handling of border security, once again putting Democrats on the wrong side of that issue. With us now, Democratic New York Congressman Dan Goldman, acting member of the Homeland Security Committee. Senator, Congressman, it's always good to see you. Thank you. Almost gave you an upgrade there. it's late at night. I thought it was interesting about this town hall. The border almost didn't come up because it is something that Donald Trump has solved. That Joe Biden said he couldn't do without legislation, Donald Trump did. Has that been a place that Democrats are facing some real weakness and vulnerability?
No, look, I think that once Senator Lankford's excellent bipartisan bill was submarined by Donald Trump, and it was clear that bipartisan legislation was not going to be able to move forward, the President Biden used his extraordinary powers, emergency powers, to close down the border. And the drop in border crossings started with President Biden dramatically. Donald Trump has not only continued to close the border, but a lot of what he is doing is very legally dubious, is being challenged in court, and is being overshadowed by, well, it's being overshadowed by his reckless deportation and detention of
Americans.
The
American people aren't buying that, Congressman. The American people don't seem to care. And Chris Saliza made a great point. Hakeem Jeffries has said no more trips to El Salvador because it doesn't work.
Well, I think the American people care. I mean, you look at the New York Times polling and the Kilmer Obregu-Garcia case, which is purely a due process issue. Someone who was removed to a prison in El Salvador, as you just mentioned, without due process. Donald Trump is upside down on that by, I think, well over 20 points. So you're citing one poll. There are lots of other polls.
There's lots of polls. We'll move on to something I know Democrats wanted to be talking about, which is the economy. There is an issue, and I think Senator Lankford agreed with me when I said there is not a working class American right now who thinks the economy is working for them. There is a lot of promises by Donald Trump. I know you've been skeptical of those, as have we on this program. But the president made the point today that he has a plan and what he is going to do with China and the trillions of dollars of investment that is promised, hasn't been delivered yet, into the United States. Can Democrats just keep at hammering away that Trump is terrible and not have a better plan?
Well, Donald Trump is the president. We're in the first 100 days of his new administration. He has a Republican House and a Republican Senate. So we don't actually, whatever we would do is irrelevant, because we can't do anything legislatively or even legally in Congress, because we need Republican help. So it's not the right question to ask. The question you're focused on is the right one, which is, what is the plan? Nobody thinks he has a plan. His haphazard, disjointed, chaotic tariffs,
You can sit here and criticize Donald Trump's plan. What is Democrats' plan?
You keep interrupting me. If his haphazard, disjointed tariffs, which went up and down and moved and here, and no one has any idea. And I represent Wall Street. I speak to bank CEOs. And the biggest risk to our economy right now is not even the tariffs. It is the fact that no one thinks that Donald Trump has any idea what he's doing, that he has any strategy. That's why you're seeing layoffs. That's why you're seeing a shrinking.
I hear you. So I'll ask the question.
Economy.
I'll ask a very simple question. What's Democrats' plan?
And he has no plan. And that's the biggest
problem. So what's Democrats' plan?
I don't know why you keep asking me that. I can have a plan that's terrific, and it doesn't. It doesn't matter. My plan would be to narrow tariffs significantly, not indiscriminately. But tariffs are not the answer to our economic woes. If you really want to invest in the working people, if you want to invest, then you have to provide incentives for companies to create jobs, to grow, to have growth and innovation, while also protecting our workers. And Donald Trump is getting rid of every collective bargaining agreement for public sector.
I just want to be fair to the president. You said he didn't have a plan. Tonight, Bill O'Reilly pushed him on that pretty hard, and I think rightfully so, because you're right. The plan has been all over the place. This, I thought, was the most coherent answer yet on what the plan is. Take a listen.
We're in a great position of strength. We'll make great deals. And where we don't make deals, Stephen, we're just going to set the deals. We'll say that country is going to pay a 20% tariff. That country is going to pay 15%. Another one's going to pay 30 or 40% because we have a big, you know, deficit with a certain country. They're going to pay 30, 40, 50, 60%. So we'll just set those deals.
Sounds like a plan or not?
No, that's not a plan. First of all, the president said that he was only going to reduce the tariffs when the other countries yielded and they came and reached a trade deal. He reduced them when he got phone calls from other countries. And we have no idea whether that's true or what they were. But the reality is that he has ostensibly two goals here. One is to onshore manufacturing in this country. If you talk to any business executive, that is at least a two, likely 4-year plan. That's not going to happen within any time frame that matters. And when he's talking about tariffs as the alternative, again, tariffs are simply a tax on consumers. He does not understand that it is not the foreign countries that are paying the tariffs. It is the American consumer that's paying the tariff. So he is punishing Americans by continuing with the tariffs, and whatever trade deals he's talking about are totally unknown and very speculative at this point.
Well, the president of the United States is powerful. He cannot repeal the laws of economics, which you have just laid out. Congressman Dan Goldman, you're welcome back anytime, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. First wrote about this in War Notes. That's your chance for an inside look at the show every day. Unflinching analysis and common sense perspective. WarNotes.com to subscribe. You'll be delighted and smarter when you check your email at 7.05 p.m. every day. One thing you'll be talking about tomorrow from the town hall when we come back. The only thing that Trump has won on with Congress is passage of the Laken Riley Act.
Right.
And it passed with Democrats in the Senate. Does that mean that there are things that Trump can get bipartisan support for?
So the Democratic Party will probably place its collective finger up to the wind and see which way the wind is blowing. Because it's destroyed now. They've got to get some credibility back. And if they're going to object to everything that Trump does, they're going to get wiped out in the midterms. It's all about the midterms right now for both parties.
And right now, Democrats feel as though they have the upper hand. The question is, do they? And there is a lot of reason to think that Donald Trump's political power is more powerful than ever. We saw that tonight in the town hall with what the American people are looking for, which is actually things to get done. That was the message from 100 Days. I'll see you tomorrow night.